Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now, welcome to The Art of Potential with your host, Kristen Heemstra, on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra, and you are listening to the Art of Potential show on 1360 WCHL. We have a great show in store for you today. We are talking with Vince Pappy. Vince is, are you a principal? Let me just ask you that. What is your title at Executive
Smarts? Yeah, I'm a managing principal with Executive Smarts.
Okay, and Executive Smarts, you are an interim executive placement firm, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so tell us what that means exactly. Okay.
The interim world is something that's been growing in the United States and continues to gain foothold, and it really encompasses two parts. One is the interim manager who is there for a short-term assignment to come in to help fix a problem, help a company with a project or a program. And the other part of the interim, which we're starting to see now, we're starting to see that interims come in as a temp to perm, where some organizations are now bringing people in.
So you get to try them
as
out.
A try, right. You both get to try each other out. Yes.
So how did this industry come to be?
The interim management business really started in Holland back in the 1980s, and it started back then because of economic pressures. And it grew rapidly in Europe, and in Europe, the drivers for interim are a little bit different than they have been in the U.S. because in Europe, because of the social economic conditions, companies had long-term commitments to terminated employees. Mm-hmm. So in many cases, companies started looking at interims as a way to bring someone in for 2 or 3 years and not incur the long-term costs, particularly if they weren't sure the direction the business was going. The United States of drivers have been a little bit different. Historically in the U.S., you've seen a lot of interims in financial positions, particularly chief financial officers and CEOs. But it's now growing to encompass all different levels.
So it's a great thing for a company because basically they can bring someone in at an executive level. They can give them a test to see how they're going to do within the organization. And then if it's working out, great, you're good to go. And if it's not, you're, you know, saying
yes.
Sayonara.
Right, and there's no long-term commitment to that person. So we're starting to see that in some respects with organizations that are growing. Mm-hmm. They're not sure. They're looking at new positions, not sure how those positions are going to flesh out in the long term. So at times, they'll bring someone in on a temporary basis and work with them to develop the position. And if there's a fit and they both like each other, in many cases, those might become permanent positions.
What about, do companies bring an executive in for a particular job?
Yes. What we're finding today is that in the past, many companies may have had a project or a program. For example, one of our clients, it was looking to retool their plants worldwide to standardize the manufacturing processes, and they put a team together.
That's a good idea.
And they decided that they were going to, obviously, many of their people were going to be on the teams, but they needed someone to lead the team, and an interim was desirable because they knew that 2 years down the road when this project was over, there'd be no fit for that person in the organization, so an interim made the most sense to do that. That's one example.
So how does an executive who's out of work right now find out about these interim opportunities?
Well, there are companies such as ourselves, Executive Smarts. The executive interim management business in the United States really consists of a lot of companies like Executive Smarts. We have offices in Houston, Dallas, Raleigh, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we are expanding and bringing principals in other markets to help do this. So those folks moving forward, the executive looking to do it, first of all, many of them use their own contacts and find positions on their own, or they will look for firms such as ours and become known to us. We interview them and register them in our database so that we have a database of people when a client comes to us looking for specifics.
And then all their credentials are right there for the client to see, and they can go through and they interview several potential executives to come through?
Yes. When a client comes to us, what we try and do is present to them 3 qualified individuals.
Okay.
We'll meet with a client to determine exactly what they need. We'll go back to the people in our database that we've already vetted out and interviewed. And these people are screened and tested so that we know who they are. And in many cases, they've been on assignments for us before, so we know how they perform. But we'll then go back to the executive and make sure that they understand the position and that the specifics the client looking for are a match with them. And we'll present those. And in many interim assignments, it's not unusual that we'll present 2 to 3 candidates, and the client, where they have an immediate need, will make a decision in a very short time frame, often within a week.
So when a client, I'm real curious about this, because we had a guy named John Grantham on earlier, and he was talking about executive recruiting. And it's just fascinating to me, the interview process, how you vet client how you vet the folks coming in that you're then matching with the clients. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that have set the executives apart from each other that clients have really appreciated?
We look for executives who've had a great deal of experience many times in various industries,
okay,
that have worked in various disciplines,
okay,
so they're very well-rounded.
Right.
And we also, depending on the client, look for executives who've been in that position before. Most of the people that we place for those assignments are what we call sensibly overqualified.
Describe that. What does that mean?
Well, they've been in the position before. It's the old term, been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Right.
Everybody uses that. But really, they've been in a position before with a company where they've solved some of those same problems. And the company may have been a larger organization they worked for, but they're very comfortable solving those problems and they know how to do it. So they can step into an interim assignment, quickly size up what needs to be done, often in 24 to 48 hours, and hit the ground running. And also, because they're an interim, they don't have to worry about the internal politics of an organization.
Which is huge. For those of us who have worked in organizations, politics really can take their toll on an organization's ability to progress, especially during times of change.
Yes. And often, too, when someone's in an organization making a decision, the politics come into how they make a decision.
Absolutely.
An interim is not bound by that. Right. So they can make a decision that's best for the company and the project. And when they're done, they can leave the company with a real honest assessment of where the company's going and what they found.
Yes. And I know this is a different use of interims, but I know in churches, particularly, I'm a Presbyterian, and in the Presbyterian church, you have a minister come in in an interim position after you have an old minister leave. The value of this is that a lot of the culture of the church is going to reflect the leadership.
Yes.
And you definitely see that in an organization as well. It doesn't matter what
right.
it is.
And many times, companies that have very difficult cultures might favor bringing an interim in for difficult assignments because they want to make sure that cultural fit is there.
Absolutely.
Despite the screening and the interviewing and all the testing that's done, it's very difficult sometimes to tell how the person's going to function within a culture of an organization.
Yes.
So sometimes there are companies have positions that are high turnover positions,
yes,
and they say, you know, maybe an interim makes sense here. Let's make sure that we really mesh and fit.
Absolutely. And all organizations have, well, most organizations have a position that I've heard called a blender position, where you just don't see people stay in the position itself because of the culture around that particular position.
Yes.
And
right.
it varies from organization to organization. Right. But with an interim, what you have is you have a person who's not bound by anybody. So they can get, if you use the analogy of a train, they can get the train back on the track, and they don't owe anyone anything for it. And they can also leave without owing anyone anything.
That's right.
And they can make unpopular decisions. Mm-hmm. They don't have to
yes.
then.
Well, the other place that we're seeing interims today is that for mentoring.
We have
companies, we've had clients that they may have a CFO who leaves, and they've got someone who they feel is got the potential for that position, but they're maybe 6 months to a year away from being ready to fill those shoes.
Okay.
So they'll bring an interim in with a stated process of working in that function, but mentoring this person to take over the function within 6 months to a year. Or they'll put the person in that role with the interim backing them up and helping them grow into it. So we're starting to see that as well, where companies recognize talent they have and rather than going outside,
yep.
want to try and take the people inside yep. that they know very well.
Yes. No, and you see that on a bigger scale sometimes in the form of a succession plan.
Yes.
You know, where you're trying to prepare your management to move up in the ranks and continue. I know Apple is one great example, and I think GSK also has a, mm-hmm. you know, a massive succession plan, but an interim would be a great way to complement that particular plan.
It is, and we've had some clients that have actually come to us and told us that they don't have a need right now, but anticipating growth mm-hmm. in the future, that they've got four or five areas where if they decide to move in that direction, that what they want us to do is look for some interims out there that we might have available so that when they reach that stage, they can reach out to us
yep.
and pull the trigger right away.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back, because we actually know that most jobs are found through networking, and that would be a great way for someone who's looking for a job to learn about an opportunity before it goes public.
Yep.
So you are listening to Kristen Heemstra. I am talking with Vince Pappy, Executive Smarts, and we will be right back.
We'll be right back.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra from the Art of Potential show, and I am talking with Vince Pappy of Executive Smarts. And Executive Smarts is an organization that provides interim executive services to companies. So one of the questions I have for you, Vince, is what size are the companies that you're seeing that are looking for these types of services?
It varies, and I mean that. When we started, and I started this business in 2004, most of my clients and our clients were Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. But we found companies, middle market and smaller organizations, even some family-owned businesses who need the help.
Yep.
And look at interim because they couldn't afford the talent on a full-time basis.
Right.
But often they can bring an interim in for a short period of time to give them that infusion of talent and help set them in the right direction. So we've worked with companies in some cases that might be as small as $20 million in sales.
Mm-hmm.
That's the exception, but there are organizations out there that do look at that.
And one of the things that we were talking about in the last segment was that organizations are starting to come to you now because they see where they're going in the future and they want to start exploring the talent pool early so that they can cherry pick, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. We've seen it not only in interim but also in for permanent searches, where I have some very good friends who are in the permanent executive search business.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they're doing is that they have clients who come to them and ask them to go out and survey the field for certain certain positions because they'd like to know who the best and the brightest are out there. So it's sort of a talent roundup.
Oh,
so that when it comes time where they need a replacement, they've already got a list of people out there, and they're starting to track them and identify them.
Yeah. And then they can also craft the job description to be attractive to the talent they're trying to attract.
Yes, very much so. But the interesting thing about that concept is that the company, the people know the company is interested in following their career.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be with another organization, but they also know that other people are out there looking at them and seeing what they're all about.
So how have you seen that play out when that happens?
I've seen it in a few instances where it is very successful for the organization because, for example, they've got an upcoming retirement and they can be very proactive knowing the retirement's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got this list of people that they've been watching and looking at, so they can reach out to those people to see, A, if they'd want to consider joining the organization, if they're ready to make a move, so that they have a short list that they're working on before the retirement and can even bring a person in beforehand. Or if someone leaves unexpectedly, hopefully they're not faced with a very long search.
Well, and I'm not sure that people understand hiring someone is a pain. It is a major pain for every organization. It is a thankless task, and that's actually why HR departments came about, I'm convinced, because
mm-hmm.
people
yes.
just don't, you don't have the time. You're focused on what the organization's trying to do. It pulls you off task. It takes a lot of energy. And if you can create a proactive plan, then that really helps you to put yourself, as you're saying, Vince, in a really good situation to have already cherry-picked and figured out, you know, this is who I can get or these are people I'm interested in. But as a job seeker, one of the things that really is helpful is to go out and start networking because 7 out of 10 jobs at least are acquired through networking
mm-hmm.
and get yourself in front of people because here's the thing. Companies do not have to legally post jobs. Government agencies are a whole different thing, but people believe that companies have to post jobs. They don't. That is not anything that's been written into a law. And so what you see are jobs getting filled all the time that no one ever hears about.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, for 8 years before I started the interim management practice, I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I was running a company. It was an outplacement company retained mm-hmm. by organizations to work with people who lost their jobs.
Yeah.
The one thing that I found that we had a lot of executives coming into the program who were not very good networkers. They were so caught up in their careers and working at their career, they didn't take the time to network. And the one thing that I try to instill in people and do today is that you need to become a networker for life.
You do.
Because that's where it's going to happen. I can tell you that I see people who think the way to find a job is they sit at a computer and answer
oh,
and then go to job boards and answer,
yes.
and then they say, gee, Vince, I applied for this job. I'm perfect for it. I never heard from them.
I know.
I tell them you're probably one of 500 people
at
or
least,
600 people.
I know. Yeah. Oh. So networking. How do you recommend people who have been out of the networking game for a while, how do they get into it so that it's a comfortable fit for them?
Okay. There are a number of ways to do it. Obviously, today, for people working, LinkedIn is becoming a valuable networking resource. And if your
Absolutely.
Listeners have not joined LinkedIn, they ought to investigate it and take a look at what that's all about, because it's a great way to find people.
It is. Let me just interrupt here. We did a show with a guy named William Blackman.
I know him very well.
And he is such a great resource on LinkedIn. And so you can go and listen to the show in our archives on WCHL. And he gives a wealth of information anyway.
Right. But I tell people, if they're looking to network, what they ought to do, and many times people think of networking as going out and asking people, I'm looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not that. And I tell them to start with, look at friends and associates. Many times, your friends or associates might be people who can help you out in the networking process.
Research tells us that the person who is likely to have a job offer for you is one person removed from your immediate contact.
Yes. But people have to – I give you a networking example. My daughter's a very good networker. And she was in a position where she had gone out to play golf one day and was – joined with three other people looking to play golf. And she was asked, what do you do? And as it turned out, this person worked for an organization. The only people they hired were people that were networked in. And she wound up from that playing golf and just being able to network with a new job. So it's amazing how those things happen. You never know where you're going to meet someone who could be in a position to help you find that next job.
No, and that's a great example, because playing golf is something she enjoys. Mm-hmm. We do know that a lot of business deals happen on the golf course.
Right.
But they also happen on the tennis courts, and they also happen in book clubs. I work for an organization that hired its executive director, six-figure salary, downtown New York City, because the person knew him from their book club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And networking is another example is that I have a friend who was looking for a new position. And one of his friends recommended him to a company, and they decided to interview him because of the fact that he was so highly recommended by someone. When this person went in, the CEO said, you know, we had 9 people to interview. You were 10 because of this.
Mm-hmm.
I had you 10 on a list of 9. After this interview today, I can tell you, you're one of the top 3, and he wound up getting the job. Because his resume, you couldn't see all the nuances in the resume, and it was that networking that got him to that position.
Absolutely. And networking works like the way you just said. It's like, first of all, what happens when a company needs to fill a job is the CEO or the person who needs to fill it, they call their friends.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or they Facebook them. I can't tell you how many things I see on Facebook of, I'm looking for someone, I trust everyone that I'm Facebook friends with. Do you know anyone who can do this?
Right.
And I've gotten them to where, we haven't opened this position yet, but if you know anyone, be sure to pass their name along.
Yes, and you're right. That is so critical to network. The other thing is that if someone is interested in a company, use your network to try and find someone who maybe works within that company that you can get to know.
Yes.
Because that's, again, most important. When a company says, we're looking for a person to fill this position, many times their employees come forward and say, I know someone you may want to talk to.
And when the economy is good, the consulting firms especially will pay, they give a bonus if you bring in a friend of yours or somebody who's qualified to take one of the positions.
Yes.
I know in D.C. that was a very common practice for
the. And that's networking is how we fill a lot of our pool of qualified interim executives, is that through their networking they identify us or we identify them, or whenever I network with a lot of people, I'm always happy to talk to people in a job search. I try and spend some of my time just listening to those people, seeing what they're looking for, and if there's anything I can do to help my point them in the right direction, I'm happy to do it. But it's just so critical.
And that's actually a perfect segue, because what we're going to do is take a break, and then when we come back, I would like to hear the advice you are giving to job seekers today, because that is just critical to where we are. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra. This is the Art of Potential show, where we talk about all things career-related. If you like what you hear, be sure to give us a big thumbs up on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. And there's a blog here on chapelboro.com, too, about different ways to get hired. I am talking with Vince Pappy. He is a managing partner of Executive Smarts, and we will be right back.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra of The Art of Potential show, where we talk about all things career related. And we are talking with Vince Pappy. He is one of the managing partners of Executive Smarts. And one of the ways I got connected through Vince is that I do a lot of speaking around the area on how to get hired. And you are one of the foundational people in one of the job groups around here. So I want to talk about a little bit what you're doing with that and then some of the advice you're giving.
Yes, I'm the, the ministry leader for St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church, their Job Connections Program. Mm-hmm. And we started that program to help people who are unemployed. And we have biweekly meetings where we bring in speakers, and we're glad you're going to be one of our speakers coming up soon. Mm-hmm. But to talk to the people about different aspects of the job search market. We also have put together a list of qualified people who can serve as job coaches in various aspects of the search. It's a it's an unpaid position, but it's there to help people in their job search and to help people who are looking forward for a job, not only people who are currently unemployed, but people who may be looking for the next career.
So when you see the folks coming in, what are some of the patterns you're seeing coming into your group?
I see a lot of people who have really do not have a good network and really don't know how to find a new job.
I'd just like to say, when I did a talk here recently, I asked how many people consider themselves introverts, and over half the room raised their hands. I mean,
I have a lot of people who tell me, well, I just can't walk up and speak to people. And, you know, I tell them that people are willing to help you.
They are.
But what I've counsel people, and particularly younger people, everybody, but younger people starting out today, is that when you go into your first job, you in effect should be looking for your next job, because the days of going to work for an organization, working for them 40 years, do a good job, get a gold watch, they're gone.
They are. And you and I are so on the same page with this. What the message is and needs to be is you are your own business. You need to be looking at the job market as your playground to create the life you want.
Yes.
Which is very different than the IBM days when, you know, I used to cater those parties when I was working in college. And it was a gold watch.
Sure. That's right. But, what people today need to understand is that they need to develop, first of all, they call it an elevator speech, but they need to have a 30-second, a two-minute something that when somebody asks what you do, that they can describe themselves, even if they're not actively looking for a job.
Right.
Because that resonates with people to understand what you're doing.
It does. And that pitch, just because I've heard so many of them, make it so a sixth grader can understand it.
Yes. One of the things that we do at our job connection meetings, we ask everybody to stand up and tell everybody what they're looking for in 10 words.
Ooh, that's tough. 10 words?
We want
like
them to get
Twitter.
Right. We want them to get to think about what it is they're trying to get across to people.
Yeah.
But, you need to start that early in your career so that as you meet people and you let them know what you do, and people define themselves by their jobs. When you go to a party, how do people define you?
Mm-hmm.
You ask someone about themselves, and the first thing they'd usually do is tell you where they work and what they do.
Yeah.
So it's important that you're able to express that succinctly and a thing that people understand it.
It is, and I will say one of the things that I also see, which is just heartbreaking to me, is we also define ourselves some ways by our title. And that is a double-edged sword, because when you're on top, you know, you have a pretty good view of yourself and you're feeling good and you're able to tell people with confidence who you are and you kind of have that energy about you that says, I'm someone important, I'm proud of who I am. And then when the title is taken away or the title is removed, sometimes brutally removed, I see people lose the energy they had with the title.
Well, not only do they lose the energy, but they're so hung up on title. I was helping a job seeker once, and they were in the process or about to turn down a job that fit everything that was perfect for them because it didn't have the same title they had before. And they felt that somehow that diminished them. And it took me a while to help walk them through the step and understand that don't take a job by the title. Take the job by the job itself and what it brings to you emotionally, financially, what it does for you and your family. Those are the important things to look at. Don't get hung up on a title.
No. And honestly, it's a bad joke, but that really is entitlement to a certain degree, mm-hmm. because there's this feeling of, I deserve this title. You got to be careful with what you put out there, because does everyone deserve to work? Well, the answer is, you know, you got to kind of think about that. Everyone should want to work and be willing to jump into the job market. But if you go into a job and say, I deserve to be hired here, you're going to come across completely different than the person who's coming in going, I would love the opportunity to work here. Mm-hmm. I think that I could really make a difference to an organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you need to get that across to an organization. Many people go into an interview and think it should be a one-sided affair. Well, it's not. You should be asking questions as well, because fit is so important. If Absolutely. There's not a fit for you in the job, and sometimes people have to take jobs for the financial aspects of their family.
Or the insurance.
Yes, of insurance, or they just need income coming in. But it's important if you have fit. If you don't have fit, there's that emotional piece. Mm-hmm. And I hear people tell me all the time, boy, at the end of the day, I am exhausted.
I've given everything.
Yeah, and they're exhausted because they're in a job maybe where it's not a fit for them. Right. So they're emotionally, they're spending all that emotional energy trying to do the job.
No, absolutely. And it's a topic we've actually addressed on the show before. Cultural fit is so important when you go into an organization. You can be a passionate worker and work for a nonprofit that shares your values and then get in there and find the culture to be so negative or so different than what you would expect that it can actually drain the very life out of you. Mm-hmm. You can go into a corporate environment that you would not think that you're a perfect match for and find that it's just filled with great people doing great things who are happy to be there, and you leave every day energized. And particularly for people who are who find it difficult to talk to others and internalize a lot of things, that's where your energy comes from. And if you're working so hard to make it work, that's just a challenge.
I had one of the first people I'd ever worked for. I got to know him, and I was in a sales and marketing position. He was the VP of sales. And I got to travel with him at one point calling on clients. And at the end of a day, he would be physically exhausted. And I finally realized in getting to know him over a period of years is that he really wasn't a fit for that job. So he was on stage every day actually performing, being somebody he wasn't. And it just drains you immensely.
It does. So have you seen people who are good fits, and what does that look like?
I've seen a lot of the assessment tools that people use, and the one thing that's interesting to me, a lot of them tell you how you are, basically, and how you are in the job, and then how well you can modify yourself to be in that job. But fit is, it's really trying to quantify it. It's something where you're comfortable doing what you're doing.
Yes.
You feel good about what you're doing.
Yep.
And maybe that's overly simplistic in some respects, but that's really what it's about. If you feel comfortable, if you like the mission, you believe in the mission of the organization, that's so important. You're in step with what they're trying to do, and that helps when it comes time to make decisions.
It does, and I know right now there are so many people who are hanging on to jobs they really don't like and in companies they're very unhappy with. Because the market is not one where you're seeing a lot of movement. And when the market does open itself back up, I personally think it's going to look completely different. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a lot more where people who want to work are going out and proposing work and trying to get in front of people, as opposed to the old traditional model where jobs are being posted and you're going to see a blend, I think, of that.
I've seen statistics that say the person entering the workforce today over the course of their career might have 10 to 15 different jobs.
At least, yeah.
It's really, you go into a job realizing you're a free agent.
Yep.
And you're there, and you give them peak performance. They compensate you well for that. And they also give you the experience when it's time to move on. You've got the experience to move to your next opportunity.
And the way that we're competing now is different, too, because not only are the folks coming out of the universities and in the workforce in the United States free agents globally. We are so global, you know, and we're just at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the globalization of economies.
I think Raleigh's a good example of globalization. When you look at the mix of people that are here in the mm-hmm. because of RTP and, yeah. and everything that's here, I think Raleigh is a great example of the globalization that we're seeing.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and take our last break. And when we come back, what we're going to do is have Vince give some parting thoughts on what he thinks job seekers, executive job seekers, need to know about the market and how to really set themselves apart. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Vince Pappy of Executive Smarts.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential show, a show about all things career related. And I am having a great conversation here with Vince Pappy. We are talking about executive interim placement and how executives are setting themselves apart in today's market. One of the things I want to start with, though, is talk about some of the common mistakes executives and actually all job seekers are making when they're approaching the job market. So, Vince, what kind of mistakes are you seeing out there?
I think the biggest one, and we've certainly seen examples of it in the national press, is people who exaggerate or over-embellish what they've done.
The second person who said that.
I see that quite a bit. People either exaggerate their educational background.
Okay.
And believe me, companies today check all of that. So
and
if
they
you're
should.
Tempted,
I'm sorry,
don't,
they have
don't do
to,
it.
But they should.
But many times people will exaggerate what they did within an organization
mm-hmm.
Or they'll over-embellish how they were part of a team and what they did. And it's becoming more difficult today to check out some of those because companies today are reluctant to give references because of the legal climate that we have out there. So there are a lot of ways that people go around trying to find other people in organization to help flesh out what this person's about. But I think it's the exaggeration and over-embellishment of what you've done in your career.
One of the things we know is that people do tend to stay in the same industries. And when you're in the same industry, even if you're at a different company, you find the same players playing the game. And so one of the big ways that people do check up on things, they have connections. They're going to make the phone call. They're going to say, hey, you know, did so-and-so do such-and-such in your organization?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And one of the things that I know that some executive search firms use is they're trying to check out a background of a candidate they're going to present. Sometimes they'll call a company where they worked before and try and find someone who knew them
mm-hmm.
and see if they'd talk to them off the record
mm-hmm.
about as to what they're all about. But that I would say that the biggest fallback, I think, is the exaggeration, over-exaggeration or embellishment issue.
And that, you know, obviously that comes from a place of fear. Someone's afraid that what they've actually done isn't going to be enough to get them a job. And I get that, but it doesn't make it okay.
Right. Well, even if you get the job, it's going to become apparent very quickly that you don't have the background that you said you do. And companies mm-hmm. today are not hesitant to pull the plug real quick if they find out there's a mismatch there. So it doesn't do the candidate good. I think some of the other things that we see out there in terms of what people do or what people need, let's look mm-hmm. at the other way. I think that if you're looking for a career path, you need to examine and take a look at where you want to be at the end of your career.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at what steps do you need, what jobs do you have to help get you to that position. Sometimes it means you may want to look at taking a sideways move to get a piece of experience that you don't have in your current job. Because companies today are looking for people who are very well-rounded.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for people because we're a global economy.
Yep.
People who are comfortable dealing with people of other cultures.
Yep, diversity is a big thing.
Diversity. People who understand and can speak different languages.
Mm-hmm.
Because many companies today, their footprint crosses countries throughout the world.
So how does an executive or anyone really indicate to a company all that they're capable of doing? How do you feel about resumes and what are your thoughts on those?
Well, resumes will give you a 2-minute window
mm-hmm.
when people look at resumes. They get so many resumes.
They do.
And it's important that if you're doing a resume, to get some help putting your resume together. There are a lot of people who can do that out there. It's not very expensive. There are a lot of books that you can read on doing resumes. But you want your resume to really reflect what you're about, because it gives you a short window when someone's reviewing it to see if they want you or not. Mm-hmm. Many companies today use software where they scan the resumes and then and then look for keywords in your resume. So it's important to understand what are the keywords in the industry that you're working for and see if you can work those into your resume. So that's a step to help get you started. But it's one of the areas that I've always found helpful or when I meet with people is say, sit down and look at things that you've accomplished in your career. Mm-hmm. And then write out what the situation was, what you did to help resolve it or to move it forward, and what the end result was. Because once you do that, you'll start to become familiar with that. And when you talk to people, you're able to embellish it, where if somebody asks you to describe a situation, by giving it some thought, writing it out, it becomes fixed in your mind.
It does.
So you're more comfortable, because that's what companies look for, is how you can help them in certain situations.
And that to also kind of leapfrog with that, that's also the way to handle interview questions. Mm-hmm. And I do want to hear some coaching tips you have for interviewing. But when you go into an interview, there's some common questions that you know are going to come up. And if you've pre-answered them, you're much less likely to walk away from the interview smacking yourself on the head going, oh, I wish I had told them about that.
Right. Well, one of the things that in an interview, and I say it's a give and take process, many times a company will ask a very broad question and you're not sure how to answer it. Don't be afraid to qualify it and ask, you know, well, what I hear you're saying is you're asking what I've done in this area, or what you're looking for is my experience in this area, so that you don't think you know what they're asking. Many times I find that people interviewing others don't ask the right questions or don't know how to ask the right questions.
Right.
So you need to go back and ask them if you're not sure to clarify it so that you're answering the right question. What you don't want to do is go off on a 5-minute tangent.
No, you don't.
And the interviewer is sitting there going, where's this headed?
Also, just in counseling 101, one of the things that we're taught as counselors is to repeat back the question or repeat back to someone what they've said, because that gives the person a chance to clarify what they've said in case what they've said didn't actually reflect what they were asking.
And it tells them you're listening.
It does. It communicates, I am paying attention to you.
That's right. That's right.
One of the other things about interview questions that I'd like to say is there's a method to it. There's the STAR method, which is very commonly practiced right now by the larger organizations. And what that requires is the situation that you were involved in, the task that you were responsible for, the results you got, and what was the actions you took and the results you got.
Yes.
You should have at least 10 examples that you can pull from, because one of the things that makes something real in the interviewer's mind is being able to hear a concrete example of how you managed to use the skill set to get the result that tells them that you know it.
And you can take those, and if you boil them down to the very essence, those can be points in your resume.
Yep.
Well, I know that a lot of people who work on resumes, that's one what they use, and that's what I was talking about earlier, the STAR, S-A-R, whatever you call them. And you can take those and really boil them down, and those become a very powerful impact statements on your resume when you're trying to describe what you did with an organization.
It does, and it also gives you talking points. So when you're talking about your daughter being on a golf trip and playing golf and meeting someone who ended up getting her the ability to get hired by an organization, when you have that in your back pocket and you can handle an interview wherever it happens, because again, 7 out of 10 jobs are gotten through networking, you'll find, I've personally found, you'll start getting interviewed no matter where you are.
Yes.
It's not necessarily an office setting. It can be at a restaurant.
Yeah, and that, you're right, because I have, in my career, when I was looking for people, and usually with salespeople, I'd be at trade shows and sometimes talking to salespeople with a competition or related industries. Yep. And I would be having a conversation with them, and in my mind, I was sizing them up. Could they be a potential for my organization? And it was amazing. Sometimes people would present themselves very well, and other times they were not prepared for that and didn't realize what was happening, so they could disqualify themselves without even knowing it.
Right, absolutely. And opportunities are everywhere. Even in today's market, there are opportunities out there. The other thing is that organizations are not posting jobs. That doesn't mean that they don't want people to come work for them. That's two very different things. And when you are in a position to be able to say to an organization or say to someone, hey, you know, what's going on with your company, and they start saying things, you're in a position when you know this information to start making yourself myself available.
Yes, and by just reading local publications and reading what's happening with the company, many times you can get clues as to what they're looking for.
Yes.
And maybe anticipate where they're heading.
Yep.
And then network with some people in the organization. You may find out that they're getting ready to hire people with your expertise, and that could put you at the top of the list.
It can, or you can go in there and pitch yourself because they know they need someone. They just haven't had the time to put a job description together. They really don't want to go through it because hiring someone is such a pain.
Mm-hmm.
And a great way to do this, too, is to come in with a short-term proposal.
Yes.
Which is back to where we started, which is the interim thing.
Yes, and that's why companies will hire people like that today. First of all, they have an immediate need, but it gives them a chance to assess the person as they're looking at it. And in many cases, they may wind up hiring for a different position because they have a need.
So I'm going to give you the last few seconds here, Vince. Can you please tell our listeners how to reach you, what they need to do to become acquainted with Executive Smarts?
Okay. Well, if you would like to be considered for our database of qualified candidates, what I would suggest is that you send me an email with your resume. And my email address is vpapi@executivesmarts.com. And I'd be happy to take a look at it, and then we can have a conversation from there.
Fabulous. And, of course, you'll be able to find all this information on the Art of Potential's website. And, again, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to give us a thumbs up on Facebook, follow our blog on chapelboro.com, and follow us on Twitter. Thank you for listening. This is Kristen Heemstra on 1360 WCHL.